From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here in Urbana-Champaign. We'll take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural news. And in the second half hour, if you stay with us or online, at willag.org. You can listen to the program right now. We'll take up Commodity Week. Our panelists this week included John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain, and Mike Zuzulo. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It's the 14th day of October, joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd. I hear it's really nice over there. It's really wet and cool over here, so I don't know how much nice weather you're going to get for the next day or so.
Well, I hope that it stays that way, at least through the weekend. We'll see, because things drift from your part of the world to ours. But it is gorgeous today. I've been out on campus a couple of times because it's Friday, and why not? And the combines are running, no doubt, today. Farmers are probably happier. They still don't like the low prices that we've had, but they've come off their lows, and they've got awfully good yields. What do you think about this last week in USDA's reports?
I do think we are carving out a long-term low in the wheat, Todd, because of what we did yesterday in light of the report on Wednesday and in light of the Federal Reserve minutes released later on Wednesday. I thought it was really nice timing to see a close above 415 yesterday and then be able to, in the December soft red futures, keep that close intact on a weekly basis today, because not only did we have the report, we had open harvest weather this week, we had a dollar at a 7-month high, and very close to hitting its March high, which would have been the highest since 2016. We've had the equities breaking lower for the most part, and we had the crude oil stocks build this week, but yet we saw the crude oil maintain a $50 price action. So when you look at it from a standpoint of the cash corn basis appreciating in your area, it looked like Bloomington appreciated, Jacksonville, Champaign, all appreciated anywhere from a nickel to 7-8 cents from what I could tell. And you have all these other factors out there. To have the wheat turn around, I think it's indicative that the managed money net short position, that's a record short position right now in futures and options, is starting to buy back their positions. And the commitment of traders data will be real important today on that note.
So the July wheat I was looking out, I think it was up, 25 cents on the week or something along those lines, if I made my calculations correctly. You've always been of a mind that wheat leads the market and can, especially during the harvest season for corn. So I think this is a good sign in your opinion. Is that right?
I do think that. I think it's a canary in the commodity coal mine. And we talked about this on Commodity Week yesterday quite a bit. And you know, I thought the other fellows had a really good point. John Bondurant's seeing the same thing that I'm seeing out here at lower wheat acres. What will they go to? Probably milo and soybeans. I've even talked to some crop insurance people out here that think maybe they could double crop it, even if they're not covered by the crop insurance, just to see if they couldn't add a little bit more revenue without spending a lot of extra money. It's just when you get wheat prices down to $2.60 a bushel or down below $2.50 a bushel in the hard red crop, it's very hard to plan it, and it's very hard to think that the corn's going to go anywhere fast without that wheat price making a low first. So, yeah, I think this was a very constructive week. We'll recommend on the weekend copy to clients and subscribers to pull the bought puts and the corn and the beans that we had in place for most of this month and wanted to keep in place until the report on Wednesday. Not really ready to get actually long yet in this market. Probably want to work off some more sales at higher levels before we do that. But aggressive guys may want to try and poke their head in on the long side. As long as we can do that with known cost positions, I wouldn't have any problem doing that to a limited extent. But I want to stay focused on another 20 cents up in March corn, get up to 385, another 20 cents up in beans, get up to around 990. That'd be March corn and Jan beans. I think those are areas to peddle some more corn and beans and then replace it if you want to with something that, if we got a South American weather play, it would be good property.
Now, you were involved, of course, with the Commodity Week program, as you mentioned. We recorded yesterday. It was not the friendliest of Commodity Weeks for, you know, the price outlook, I think. What was your feel about that program? And we'll hear it here pretty shortly on within this hour.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because I didn't feel like it was negative. I felt like everybody was tepid. I felt like everybody was cautiously optimistic that we had room to run because of these managed money net short positions being so large in corn and wheat. And I thought one of the things that Joe brought up was really Joe Vaclavec that brought up was that the trade was probably already trading 52 to 52 and a half bushels of soybeans and in terms of a yield for this year. And if that's accurate and he's got a beat on that and we are trading a lower corn yield and I think corn yield's going to go down, I would be optimistic this market to a point. And I think that's what I was trying to convey. But I think the demand bull is very well alive and kicking and showing himself out. And Wednesday's report, I think, validates that. But we're 79% above year to date on corn export inspections, and USDA's got us at 14%. Either we're going to fall off a cliff in March, April, or USDA's just got it too low. And I think that's where the South American weather comes into play. I would not put a top on this market if we could get a real valid South American weather play, because that would not only extend our export market, but it would also make the managed money people probably get net long on the idea that we're curbing supply. That's the key, is curb the supply they buy, add to the supply they sell. To me, that's kind of been the calculus all year.
Have you talked to anybody about crop insurance? Of course, this is another setting month, and we'll set the backside of the crop insurance. Anything that producers need to be wary of on this one, or is it just the month we're going to set the crop insurance and either the checks will be cut or they won't?
Yeah, I don't think there's much to talk about. I would say in the new crop, there's probably a lot more to talk about because we are getting close to that $10 handle in Nov beans and $4 handle in D17 corn. And I've talked to more and more producers who want to plant more beans this year if they can get above or at a $10 cash sale. I don't have any problem with that because it's one of those years where you're going to have to cut costs at every point you can. Just be ready to take a higher level of crop insurance and be ready to lock up to 100% of insured bushels in place if you choose that route, and then be prepared to maybe a couple times to buy it back on a South American weather scare and then maybe on a United States weather scare. But I think most producers I'm talking to right now are talking to me about 17 crop, especially since they've got 16 bushels in the bin, and especially a lot more in corn than beans.
We probably should talk about the livestock side. It's not been a pretty week for the cattle in particular.
No, and I think the big thing with the cattle has been the dollar, and the managed money positions have been long there. And I think they liquidated enough here at this point, Todd. And I would also say it was nice to see the Mercantile Exchange come out today and say that one of the things that's on the table for them to change is to go back to a cash deliverable system in terms of fat cattle and settle them up against cash markets. I think that solves a lot of problems when it comes to transparency. And it was one of the things I talked to the Mercantile Exchange person about last week when she visited me, is that we need more transparency in the cash market because the futures market is essentially doing whatever it wants. And if you look at the cash feeder index, it's $5 above the October and even more than that above the November feeder futures. We shouldn't be making this type of disparity this close to expiration. So I think it was welcome news. I'd like to see a close back above 97.35 in October fat cattle. I think that would put us in for a low. And I would say that 2017, we're due for a 7-year low in fat cattle.
Hey, thanks so much. And we'll talk with you again in a week.
Thanks for having me, sir. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In today's agricultural news, the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Zippy Duvall, is not giving up on the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, even if it does not pass in a lame duck Congress. Duvall says the cure for low commodity prices is higher demand, and the way to boost demand is with TPP.
Trans-Pacific Partnership, with 11 other countries beside our own, tearing down barriers and giving us access to the growingest middle class group of people in the whole world.
Duvall says Farm Bureau will not turn its back on $4.4 billion in new farm income and 40,000 new jobs expected from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, no matter what the presidential candidates say.
We have two candidates running for office, and they'll say anything to get that vote. We can have congressmen and senators running for their positions to get votes there. They're not in the mood to really talk about it right now, but all of them understand how important trade treaties are to America, not just farmers and ranchers, but to America.
And that leads him to just one conclusion.
And I have high hopes that whoever's elected, whenever they're elected this fall, that they'll look at this Trans-Pacific Partnership. They may work out a few difficulties in it, but it's not in the agricultural part of it. And then we'll move forward and have the opportunity to speak to it. If not in a lame duck, we'll speak to it soon in the future, because this whole country, jobs, everyone in this country is going to depend on the trade treaties that are approved in the future.
Farm Bureau continues to press the lame duck TPP action, though consideration is looking less likely, that based on comments by House and Senate leaders. Well, let's stay with trade for just a moment, but we'll move overseas. The Constitutional Court of Germany Thursday supported a trade deal between the European Union and Canada. The top court in Germany rejected a legal challenge to the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement. The decision allows EU trade ministers to move forward on a vote next week to approve the agreement. It would also require ratification from national and some regional parliaments to go fully into force. The decision allows EU trade ministers to move forward on a vote next week to approve the agreement. Well, let's come back here to home now, where Wells Fargo analyst, and yes, a Wells Fargo analyst, but not related to the Wells Fargo problems of recent, says the equipment manufacturing industry's demand cycle should bottom out within the next 12 to 18 months, signaling a turnaround for the industry. The turnaround would mean improved sales, volumes, and margins for Deere & Company's fiscal 2017 and 2018 years, and improved outlooks for other manufacturers as well. The Wells Fargo data shows Deere and AGCO Corporation outperforming average market performance for the first time since 2012 and 2008, respectively. Wells Fargo predicts a $15 to $20 increase per share for Deere based on projected turnarounds. And finally today, just ahead of the annual FFA convention, Domino's Pizza announced this week the chain will donate $1 million to the National FFA organization. The five-year commitment will begin in 2017. Each year, the gift will help fund college scholarships to students aspiring to further their education after high school, as well as grants for supervised agricultural experiences. The donation will also assist agricultural literacy and advocacy programs and FFA's Living to Serve platform. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media. Do stay with us for the whole hour if you can. Commodity Week is up next. Our special guest this week, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Commodity Week gets our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture. Already posted to our website at willag.org, willag.org. There also you'll find a way to sign up for your tickets, purchase them that is, for the November 22nd. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving Farm Assets Conference. And I've updated the website for that, so you can even go to farmassetsconference.com and see all the details if you'd like. It's a great conference. If you've not ever been before, check out farmassetsconference.com. If you have been before, you know it's just something you want to sign up for right now. It's just $30, and you can do that at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. Now up next, let's talk about the agricultural weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. He's from right here in Urbana-Champaign. Eric, thanks for being with us. Tell me about what you see.
Well, Todd, this last week's cold front really came through and changed our weather quite a bit. You know, it had been pretty warm leading into this, but that cold front came through and knocked temperatures down, and the daily temperature change from Tuesday into Wednesday was over 30 degrees. And that cooler air has kind of stayed locked in place. And right now, we have frost advisories for northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, southern Michigan, northern Indiana, and most of Ohio. So this has been a pleasant change from the warmth we've had for several months now. Now, when we try to think about what we're looking at for the near term, don't get too used to the cooler weather. By Sunday, we might already be back up into the 80s again. We have a big ridge that's moving into the jet stream that's going to push right through the central states, and it's going to meander off to the east with time. And that warmth is really going to carry through much of next week, maybe all the way until Thursday of next week before we start to see some cooler weather come back in. So what's interesting is that this time of year, we should be looking for our first frost here in central Illinois. Average first date of the frost is around October 15th, maybe out to the 20th. But because of this warmer weather that's coming back in next week, it's really going to push our first frost date here quite a ways forward into the future. I'll also say this, with the system that's kind of coming through to kind of bring in that warmth, we might have a chance for some showers and storms on Sunday, but until then, it looks to be pretty dry. Now, while we're dealing with, you know, relatively dry conditions and a little bit cooler weather now, boy, I tell you, the West Coast is just getting pummeled. There's a branch of the polar jet stream that is slamming into the West Coast of the United States with wind speeds at the jet stream level that are approaching 200 miles an hour. And it is basically just funneling a whole lot of moisture into the Pacific Northwest. And this is good because, remember, California is in the middle of an enormous drought. You know, they could have used all of those 13.6 trillion gallons of water that that Hurricane Matthew brought to the southeast. They could have used that, probably 10 times that amount, to help get them out of drought. But this is at least a good sign for the Pacific Northwest. Now, kind of getting back into the central part of the United States, when we look long term, the one thing that I'm seeing as a very, very persistent factor moving forward is that the weather systems are lacking a lot of high latitude blocking. Now, what does that mean? That basically means expect very transitory weather patterns. Cold fronts that come through that are followed by brief warm-ups. I think that's going to be the main story from now all the way into November. But I'll tell you, once we get past November and start looking at December, well, last year, remember, winter didn't even start until mid-January. I don't think that's the case for this year. We've been forecasting for this winter now for several months, and one of the most consistent patterns that I've seen is that cooler air is going to look like it's going to really try to get into this area by mid-December. And what that means is we could start to expect a more snowy and a more active weather pattern earlier this year than we saw last year. And some of the big things that are kind of showing up to kind of push that is the fact that right now in the Pacific Ocean, things are set up such that there's a weak La Nina, and the Pacific, in the North Pacific, I should say, there is the what we call the positive phase of the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. Now, what does all that mean? That basically means that the jet stream will likely get stuck into a pattern where we're going to have a very active storm track through the Ohio River Valley. And as a consequence, we can expect very, very kind of volatile weather conditions. And what I mean by that is changing quite a bit, but I also expect it to be quite wet. You know, and finally, speaking of wet here, South America right now is dealing with quite a bit of precipitation being forecast for the next 4 or 5 days in the southern growing regions. You know, they do need the rain to come in to help bring their soil moisture storage up, but we're talking 400 to 500 millimeters of precipitation moving in to parts of the southern growing regions there in South America, like Parana. Now, 400 millimeters of rain is actually about 15 inches. And I don't think they're going to quite get that much, but there is still quite a lot of precipitation on its way. And as they're getting ready to start their planting season, that much precipitation can really be a problem and start to cause some local and even more widespread flooding problems. So while they do need the rain to kind of come back in for the start of the season, they don't need this much.
Eric, it's always good to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I do appreciate it. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible, from right here in Urbana-Champaign. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.